your 14-year-old daughter came into your room looking rather serious and told you that she was pregnant, but that she hadn't had sex, you'd probably be a little bit stressed. Well, that is the subject in this episode of The Good Life on ABC Radio and on your pod with me, Noel Debien. Well, in the first chapter of the Gospel of Luke, there is a mystical story telling of the angel Gabriel, an angel noted by Muslims and Jews also, appearing to a young woman called Mary and telling her that she would conceive and bear a son and that she should call him Jesus, a name meaning Saviour, story you probably know. Well, March 25th is the date marked by many Christian churches as this festival event, the Annunciation of the Lord, it's called. In England and among Anglicans, it's often called Lady Day. Muslims also honour the young Jewish girl they call Miriam, and the Virgin Mary even has her own surah in the Quran, Surah Miriam. And if that's not enough to intrigue you, Martin Luther himself said that the veneration of Mary is inscribed in the very depths of the human heart. On the other hand, another Protestant reformer, John Calvin, accepted Mary's perpetual virginity and the title Mother of God. Things that may seem quite surprising. Well, it's likely no other woman in all history has been the occasion of so many artistic works, so many musical offerings, or patron of so many religious institutions. The Annunciation marks the moment when Christians grandly claim that the whole of human history was irrevocably changed for the better, when this young woman accepted her role in what Christians understand is God's plan for the world. Well, in this episode of The Good Life, we set out to explore just one modern, particular and personal example of how the young Jewish girl, Mary, might influence consciousness and behaviour for the good life. We begin with just one musical offering, a piece called Ave Maria, Hail Mary, the words of the angel Gabriel, by Franz Biebel, sung by the choir of Trinity College in Melbourne.
Hunt. I'm the Executive Dean of the Faculty of Theology and Philosophy at Australian Catholic University.
Anne Hunt, thank you very much for being part of The Good Life. It's the Annunciation, the 25th of March, and I believe you're the right person to talk to in one sense because it's one of your favourite feasts, you told me in preparing for this.
It is one of my very favourite days of the year, so it's a special pleasure to talk about it.
Now, what is it that intrigues you or moves you or interests you about the Annunciation of the Lord to Mary? What is it that gets you?
I love it perhaps because there are so many beautiful images of the Annunciation. One of my favourites would be that one by Fra Angelico at the Convent of St. Mark in Florence. And I guess I've grown up with those images and loved them for a lifetime. And the sheer wonder of the mystery of that Annunciation. There's a particular image that I love in the Wharncliffe Hours in the National Gallery of Victoria in Melbourne. And in the upper half of the illumination, it shows the heavenly court. And here is God presenting a commission to the Archangel Gabriel, who's looking so diligent and so attentive and so conscientious. And in the lower half of the picture, we have Gabriel announcing to Mary, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee, announcing the Lord to her. And I love it. So many beautiful images of the Annunciation, I think, have fostered a love for that particular feast day.
What would be your earliest memory as a little girl? When you throw your mind back, how did Mary first come into your mind? What did you first see or hear or think of?
My first knowledge of her came from my parents, who had very strong devotion to Mary. They were pre-Vatican II Catholics. When they went to Mass, they would stand in the congregation or pray or kneel in the congregation, and they would have been saying the rosary a lot of the time and their own devotional prayers. And we, as a family, we said the rosary every day for many years.
Mum or Dad would organise it and everybody would kneel and off you'd go. You were one of those families.
That's right. Mind you, my father was of Irish descent. I used to often be amused by him because he could say the rosary faster than anybody else I knew. And I remember as a family, we as children, we would do Christmas plays at home and so forth, but somehow that devotion was transmitted to me.
How did it start to change? Because you grew up as a Christian as well as a person, didn't you?
As I reflect on my own spiritual life and my prayer life now, there's not a strong devotion to Mary per se. When I pray, I tend to pray directly to God. And because the Trinity, of course, is a great love of mine and an area of study over many years now, the Trinity figures very prominently in my prayers. And not so much prayer to Mary. I can remember at one stage when our mother died very early when I was a child, and so I've had a series of mother figures. But I remember when my stepmother at one stage was quite ill and distressed and I think psychologically afflicted just at that stage in her life. For her, Mary was the protector, the intercessor, the one who protected one and put forward one's case.
When you're talking about being at Mass and saying the rosary, that people in Catholic churches had a private devotion and Marian devotion formed part of that saying the rosary, whereas, you know, skip forward 30, 40 years, no one really of our generation and younger would really think that saying the rosary while Mass was happening was appropriate at all, would they?
Indeed, indeed. And that's one of the great advances brought to prominence by the Second Vatican Council, the full and active participation of the people in the celebration of the Mass.
In a sense, if you look at the Roman Catholic Mass, it's addressed to the Father through the Son, the Spirit is mentioned. It's very Trinitarian the way it works.
Indeed.
And it seems that almost at the same time that the Mass became full and active participation, the words you used, it went into English in English-speaking countries, and the rosary and those private devotions disappeared, you find that the focus on Mary changes. It actually is less emphatic than it was before the Vatican Council.
Yes, I think that's true, although I think it's part of a larger phenomenon, and that is part of a cultural amnesia that's besetting us within the church generally, the loss of the sense of the cult of the saints, for example. If I talk to young people now, they haven't imbibed the tradition and the stories of the saints in the way that earlier generations would have done so.
That sort of literacy of religion, of course, has, I think, diminished, it's fair to say, in the broader population. Not always, because you'll find plenty of families and schools that do it well.
Oh, indeed.
But I wonder also, when you think about it, when you were a little girl, did you ever sit down, you know, when you're 6 or 7 and think, one day I want to be a professor of systematic theology?
Not at all.
See, there's a change too, isn't there?
Although I think probably one's first communion is a very a precious time in a child's life. That's probably my strongest memory of devotion as a child, or that consciousness of relationship to God.
I was being a little bit mischievous before saying, when you were a little girl, did you dream of becoming a theology professor? Because, of course, there weren't many women theology professors, say, in the 1960s and 70s. It's great. There were, of course, but not as many as there are now when you look around the theologates. Given that the place of Mary in the centrality of Marian devotion among Catholics, and I'm asking this experientially rather than as a professional, mm-hmm. It seems to have in one sense diminished in terms of its apparent or manifest presence, yet the role of women in the church has conversely at the same time, I don't know whether they're related or not, risen, and there's much more participation in teaching and leadership of women in the church.
In my own experience, those two things aren't related. I'm blessed to belong to that generation for whom the doors of the theologates were opened and we were admitted and allowed to sit in classes with seminarians and study theology. And there were many other women in my classes, many of whom were teachers of religious education. This is in the context of a fairly quick decline in the numbers of religious in Catholic schools. It was that opening of the doors to lay people generally, actually, into studying theology.
A passion catch and then it drives you forward and then you end up suddenly running a theological faculty.
Exactly, exactly. Well, I would never have dreamed at that stage that that's how my life would unfold, but certainly a great love for this study and a desire always to want to know more of the tradition and be able better to express it in a contemporary milieu.
I want to keep harping on the Annunciation and the Virgin Mary herself. A consistent tradition, you know, we're talking about, well, right from the beginning, arguably, in the Catholic and Orthodox traditions, continuous emphasis on Mary as first among the saints, has been traditionally said. You were struck by the art. You've remembered all of the effort and artistic focus that's gone into trying to depict the mother of Jesus. Where has she gone for you now that you're all grown up? You're actually a theology professor. Where does she fit?
Possibly more subliminally than consciously. I was thinking of some of the things that I love about Mary and that I hope are part of my understanding of life. Yes, she is our preeminent model of faith, and she's always depicted as a beautiful woman. Remember, she would have only been quite young. She would have been
in her teens
12,
somewhere.
13, yep. 14. I can imagine that she was beautiful. When I think of the people that I know whom I would consider to be, well, transparently good is the expression that I use for them. You know, in your life you meet just a few people who strike you as being transparently good. There's a goodness that radiates from them. And I think Mary would have been like that, and even more so. In my own prayer life, in my own spiritual life, she's there, perhaps pervading it all, but not obviously there in it all. I love that expression about her pondering these things in her heart. I think of her holding the infant Jesus and the marvel of Jesus, Son of God, here as a baby, as an infant, totally dependent. And then I think of her holding the dead Christ, the beautiful Pietà of Michelangelo in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Those images that I see and love in religious art add to what I know of her from the scriptures.
Well, those art images, they're not just about fake things or pretend things, because though we may not have known exactly what she looked like, these art pieces, for the most part, are taken directly from scripture accounts and also from traditional accounts of things that the young Jewish woman Mary did.
That's right. And the cult of devotion to her goes back to the very early days. There are images there of her even in the catacombs.
The Orthodox and Catholics are very much in step with the place of Mary among the saints. But you've also been doing ecumenical work, haven't you, as well? You come into contact with Anglicans in particular. You've looked at this sort of dialogue. How does the place of Mary for you as a Catholic person and also somebody who knows theology, how do you find it strikes against or comes up against Anglican perceptions?
Obviously, there are very different positions within Anglicanism, different levels of attunement with Catholic understandings of Mary and the cult of the saints. The Reformers quite rightly denounced the abuse of indulgences and some excessive devotional practices that were prevalent at the time, and the very notion that one could sell grace, and also the notion that one could not have direct access to God.
The older Catholic thought that you had to go through Mary to get to God, as it were. You had
exactly.
to go through a saint.
That's right, or intermediaries. I suspect that even now there's a certain discomfort, certainly in some quarters, about the devotion to Mary and the devotion to the saints more generally, but I think it's often a misunderstanding in terms of contemporary Catholic faith. We respect the saints, we love them, we see them as our companions in the journey of faith, our heroes and heroines. and models of faith lives lived in attunement to God, but we don't adore them, we don't worship them in the way that we worship God. There's a clear distinction between Mary and the saints and God. And of course, to call her the Mother of God is an astonishing title. Actually, one of the things I realize that informs my views of Mary is very much her titles. Mary, Mother of Perpetual Succor, Mary, Help of Christians, Mary, Mother of Sorrows. I think that's a powerful image. She who knew so many sorrows in her life, and especially the cruel execution of her son. But of course, I think we couldn't speak about Mary and her place in the church without raising some of the concerns about her that the feminists, I think, rightly have, and that is that when Mary, as the Virgin Mother of God, and her perpetual virginity, and her receptivity, her obedience, her passivity, in a way, it's a holy passivity, actually, her utter receptiveness, unreserved receptiveness to God and God's will for her. When you look at many of the saints, but some of my favorites like Teresa of Avila and Julian of Norwich and Mary Ward and Hildegard of Bingen, these strong, vibrant, active women who did such great things, including our own Mary MacKillop. And I think what they share in common is that this is not the cult of the celebrity. Each of the saints, and Mary preeminently, what they say to us is, look at Jesus. All of them are wanting us to look at Jesus, to follow him.
I think that's a very good place to end. And I want to thank you, Anne Hunt, the Executive Dean of Theology and Philosophy at the Australian Catholic University, based in Melbourne, for sharing your personal perspective on Mary on the Feast of the Annunciation.
My pleasure, and my thanks to you, Noel.